Well, good morning, everybody. Here I was thinking I was up here 5 or 6 minutes early, and I'm now 2 minutes late. So, Paul, would you like to take your seat with the rest of the councillors? Thanks.
Sure.
No, that one. He was having a cuppa with a resident, which is always nice, but maybe not the right time. Okay, I'd like to acknowledge the Quandamooka people, who are the traditional custodians of the land on which we meet, and I would pay respects to their elders past and present and extend that respect to other Indigenous Australians who are present. And I'm declaring the meeting open at 9:32. Public conduct at meetings. All members of the public present at a meeting must, not without prior approval of the chairperson, make any audio or video recording or take photographs. Remain quiet and not disrupt the meeting in any way. Not bring into the meeting any signs, placards or items that may cause a hazard or interfere with any other person present. Be suitably dressed and turn all mobile devices to silent mode and leave the meeting to take any calls. As chairperson, it is my responsibility to warn a member of the public present at a meeting who is not complying with any of these requirements and may, with or without such warning, require the person to leave the meeting and not return to such period as the chairperson decides. This period may include future meetings. Now, can I have a mover for a leave of absence, please, for Mayor Williams? Moved, Councillor Edwards, seconded Councillor Bishop. All in favour? Thank you. And may I also have a mover and seconder for a leave of absence be granted to Councillor Mitchell, who is also with the Mayor over in New Zealand on a tourism summit. Moved, Councillor Gleeson, seconded Councillor Hughes. All in favour? Thank you. And Councillor Elliott is not in the room for either of those votes. Yep. Okay, now it gives me great pleasure to move on to our devotional segment, and I welcome Pastor Peter from the Uniting Church at Cleveland.
Push the button.
There we go, thank you.
Good morning, folks. My name's Pete. I'm one of the ministers down at the Uniting Church in Cleveland. It's great to be able to share with you this morning. I have to say, my son is a great disappointment to me. He's 30 years old, he's married, he's in his own house, he has two wonderful children, so that all sounds pretty good so far. He's been watching The Bachelor in Paradise, and it's very sad. And I was leaving to go to a meeting last night, and my wife said, "Do you want me to record anything for you?" I said, "Yeah, can you record the last 10 minutes of The Bachelor for me?" She said, "I didn't think you were interested in that show." I said, "I'm not, but I like the last 10 minutes when they look horrified that someone stabbed them in the back. Because that's what they all seem to do to each other the whole time." The reality is, though, that those kinds of relationships are nothing new. Let me read to you briefly a story from Genesis, which is one of the oldest books that we have in the Bible. And you may be aware that Abraham and Sarai are promised by God that they'll have descendants as many as the stars. But they're both really old and past the time of having children. And Sarah comes up with a wonderful idea. "You see, the Lord has prevented me from bearing children. Go to my slave girl that she may have a child for me." And Abraham, according to the way this is written, listened to the voice of Sarah. So he went and did as he was told. Doesn't say reluctantly at all, but went and did what he was told. So he went to Hagar and she conceived. And when she saw that she conceived, she looked at her mistress with contempt. And then Sarah said to Abraham, "May the wrong done on me by you visit you." All of a sudden, Abraham's the bad guy. I don't know why that could possibly be. And in the end, he says, "Hagar's your servant, your responsibility, do with her as you like." And she's banished, sadly, along with her child. God visits them later and takes care of them. So sort of works out okay. But this whole thing about the way we relate to each other and do the ends really justify the means, and those sorts of questions, I think, are ones that confront us often. And it leads us to the point where we start to wonder about what is the legacy that we might leave. So I want to show you two quick pictures. So here we've got Kurt Fearnley. And if you're paying any attention, there was a bit of an event on the Gold Coast in the last couple of weeks. And for me, the face of that event as an Australian, for me, was Kurt Fearnley. And to hear him talk the day that he was told that he would carry the flag and the closing ceremony was remarkable. Did anyone see any of the interview? Where he says that he never thought, as you know, a child, 6, 7, 8 years old in a wheelchair, that he would see someone in a wheelchair lead and carry the flag at the closing ceremony of a games. He never ever thought he would see that happen. And the reality is he didn't. Next slide, thanks. This is what we should have seen. But for whatever reason, the decisions that were made to justify a particular end were ones that have brought the whole games into ridicule. And in a sense, the legacy that could have been rich and remarkable and the first ever and something that was remembered for decades will now be remembered as, remember, they were the ones that wouldn't let the guy carry the flag. So we've got to remember something. We don't really need the picture there anymore, but you can leave it there if you'd like looking at him. I don't mind. But we have these things that we say and do that for which we're remembered, sometimes the things that we don't want to be. Now, I didn't grow up in Queensland. I grew up in New South Wales, just outside of Parramatta. And so I look at politics in Queensland quite differently. So a lot of people would want to tell me how different Peter Beattie and Joe Bjelke-Petersen were, but I actually see them as being remarkably the same. Joe used to say, what was his famous saying? Don't worry about that, wasn't it? Peter Beattie says, I know we stuffed up, I'll fix it. It's exactly the same. So we have these ideas about what we leave behind. The ends don't always justify the means. Ask Steve Smith or Cameron Bancroft. They're probably regretting some recent actions, aren't they? Steve Smith, I guess, when I talked to some people about that, when that incident took place, you know, here was a guy who could have been remembered as the next best, which compared to Bradman isn't too bad a situation to be in. But no matter how good he becomes, once he comes back, he'll always be the guy that cheated, won't he? And it reminds me of when I was looking after youth groups and things like that with young people, and I'd be talking to some of the girls, and they'd sort of talk about a guy, and they'd look at each other and they'd say, oh yeah, but he's an NGB. I'd say, what's an NGB? Oh, nice guy, but. They would have these qualifications that would go on the end about why they weren't perhaps as good as they could have been. In the end, our personal integrity is probably one of the most valuable things that we can have. And I think integrity is becoming more and more valuable simply because of the reason that it's becoming more and more rare. Too many people are taking shortcuts. I think too many people are looking to try and understand what they can get for themselves on the way through rather than fulfilling whatever it is they might be called to or responsible for. My hope is that not just in this city, but across our nation and even further, that sense of personal integrity and desire to be seen to be authentic and real and valuable would be an increasing commodity that we see, not just in organisations and people, but right across the whole of what we do. Because in the end, I think it's probably one of the most important things. And so if we go back to the recent games, regardless of what he wasn't allowed to do or what was or wasn't shown of him, I think someone like Kurt Fearnley has his integrity firmly in place. My hope is that each of us, regardless of where we sit in this room or those that sit outside, might strive to be people of clear integrity, people that are willing to be drawn to the very best that they can become, and not to forego that for any reason. Will you let me pray for you? God, we thank you for the opportunity that you give us to be in places of responsibility. Remind us, God, that as we find ourselves in these places, we are called to be perhaps even more than people expect of us. So we pray that as this meeting takes place today, that you'll grant each one participating patience, clarity of thought, wisdom, and discernment. And may the best be done for all those that live across this city. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Amen. God bless you, folks. Have a great meeting. I've got a stick down here, I think.
Okay, we move on to recognition of achievement. I haven't been advised of any. Yes, but we haven't done anything individually at the moment. Can I have a mover and seconder that the minutes for the general meeting held on the 21st of March 2018 be confirmed? Move Councillor Hughes, seconded. Thank you, Councillor Edwards. Are there any correctness or any comments to be made?
No, thank you, Mayor. They've all gone through very well, thank you.
Great, thank you. Okay, I'll put the motion. Thank you. Those in favour? Great, thank you. And we'll move on to matters outstanding from minutes of the previous general meeting, and I'll ask the Chief Executive Officer, and there's none. Well, that was very quick. And we'll move on to public participation. Can I have a mover and seconder for the motion, please, that the meeting adjourn for a period of 15 minutes for public participation segment to allow members of the public to address Council on matters of public interest related to local government? Those in favour? Oh, mover, sorry. Moved Councillor Bishop, second Councillor Golay. Those in favour? Those against? Councillor Tolte, I don't think you voted. Oh, sorry, I didn't see a hand go up. Could I just do that again then? Sorry, those in favour? Thank you, unanimous. Okay, before the first speaker, I would just like to announce, please, that you may have noticed the signage in the chambers regarding public participation at meetings. It is Council's usual practice to require any person wishing to address the meeting to state their name and suburb or organisation that they represent and the subject they wish to speak about. This information is recorded in the minutes of the meeting, which is a public document, available for inspection at Council's Administration Building and published on Council's website. I also advise that the meeting is being recorded in audio, video, and that by speaking you acknowledge and agree that the recording, video, may be placed in the public domain. Any person addressing a meeting will state their name and suburb or organisation they represent and the subject they wish to speak about, stand unless unable to do so, act and speak with decorum, be respectful and courteous, and make no comments directed to any individual council employee, councillor, or member of the public, ensuring that all comments relate to council as a whole. As chairperson, it is my responsibility to consider each application on its merits and consider any relevant matter in making my decision to allow or disallow a person to address the local government. Give priority to members of the public who have made written application to the CEO to address the meeting. Determine the maximum numbers of speakers based on the number of persons wanting to speak at the time available, and each speaker has a maximum of 5 minutes dependent on the number of speakers. And I can also withdraw the approval to address Council before the time period has elapsed, and debate or discussion cannot be entered into at this time. There is a hearing loop for any speakers who are hearing impaired. Please wait in your seat and we'll bring a microphone to you, and please stand while speaking. So Mr. Tony Gilson, a resident of Lamb Island, is our first speaker. And before you begin, Tony, please state your name and suburb or organisation you represent, and then begin when ready. Thank you.
Ms. Tony Gilson, I'm a resident of Lamb Island and I'm representing myself. In the last 6 months, I've taken the opportunity to meet and greet Redland Bay and Bay Island residents. To date, I've engaged with close to 1,000 people and have been privileged to broaden my understanding of the unique needs and wants of both communities. A little bit of background on myself. I've been a resident of Lamb Island for 15 years. I have a history with the Redlands going back about 40 years, when my father was a golf professional at the Redland Bay Golf Club. I am married to the ever patient and lovely Karen. I have 5 children, 2 of whom remain working and studying in the Redlands. For the majority of the past 15 years on the Bay Islands, I have been self-employed in small business, running a building product supply enterprise, and for 4 years, the Lamb Island convenience store. My aim from around 6 months ago is to ensure a level of debate and engagement that is respectful at all times. Sometimes emotion can gather wind, and things can be said that one would look back and prefer it would have stayed unsaid. As a personal preference, I intensely dislike targeting an individual on a personal level. By all means, discuss the issues and stay on subject, but I trust my public behaviour will always be indicative of this principle, raising the bar, if you will. There are a few issues that have a majority view, and in most cases are grounded in logic. As mentioned at the start of this presentation, I will not misuse this opportunity to address this meeting disrespectfully. If I could just state a few things, residents of Redland Bay, and to a lesser degree the Bay Islands, are extremely worried about what is viewed as high-density housing estates without the prior provision of appropriate infrastructure. I have become more aware of constraints facing council in terms of existing state legislation. The Bay Islands is a truly unique and diverse community, of which I am mightily proud to be a resident of. Over the last 6 months of listening and learning, I formed a firm view that the two most disadvantaged groups are generational: high school aged teenagers and our senior residents. I've had more than one occasion where elderly residents have been highly emotional with the thought of needing to vacate their homes of many decades to secure a place in a mainland aged care facility. There is a wonderful model that has just opened in Logan that is a private-public partnership with the Church of Christ and the state government, and I understand supported with federal funds as well. With the age demographic on the Bay Islands being just over 20 years older than the Queensland average, this is an issue that can only become more prominent in years to come. I look forward to hearing back from the state government on their thoughts. In relation to an island-based high school, I am aware that the current numbers would not allow a state high school to be funded, but I have made contact with Independent Schools Queensland for some guidance on alternate models or suggestions. Island bridging remains a live and emotive issue for Bay Island residents. There has been some words written that would imply I've taken on a definitive position on the subject. This is not the case. I have committed to be representative and attentive to all residents' concerns, including but not limited to island bridging. I acknowledge that the majority of these issues cross over jurisdictions, but I sincerely believe there is an opportunity for local government to participate in some aspects of these matters, going beyond advocacy only. In recent weeks, I have published some words that represent a culmination of 6 months of meeting local residents. I'm not intending to raise those issues this morning, but to work within the existing structure of writing to the executive leadership team and copy into the Division 5 councillor. My intent in regard to communicating residents' requests will be to work within the structure that exists in this building. My motivation is to try to assist the local community, even if only as a conduit to obtain the information, or in some cases be an advocate for action. I acknowledge that I need to ensure as much as possible that I have an awareness and understanding of the history of issues as well as legislative implications. On a purely personal level, I found the last 6 months of listening and learning, whether by attendance at local group meetings or face-to-face at listening posts, to be a truly enjoyable experience. The willingness of the vast majority of folks to engage constructively has been an eye-opener and often humbling. I fully intend to keep up these activities over the next 2 years. Another aspect of representation that I'm totally committed to is to try to work across the aisles of the three levels of government, as well as trying to move beyond perceived political tribalism.
What's the subject we're getting to? I'm sort of hearing this is an application for a job type thing. What's the specific issue the resident is on about? I'm floundering here.
I think Mr. Gilson has just about concluded, haven't you? Yes. I did have a talk with Mr. Gilson before he started.
Madam Deputy Mayor, paragraph I just read was probably one that should have been edited out based on our discussion, but I was halfway through it, so I do apologise if I crossed any boundaries. If I could just finish the last few words?
Yeah, if you could just conclude, because the 5 minutes is up.
Okay. Very last comments. Social media is an intrinsic part of our day-to-day life. I'm a great supporter of the Council's campaign of Pledge Not to Sledge. I'd like to take the opportunity to thank yourselves for the opportunity to talk at this meeting. It is genuinely appreciated, as it is a forum for public discussion and a commitment to grassroots democracy. I have the utmost respect for our mayor, all councillors and the Redden City Executive. I have an appreciation of everyone gathered here's commitment to community service. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Gilson. And Mrs. Stephanie Todd of Russell Island also applied. If you'd like to come forward, thank you. And again, just please state your name, suburb and organisation you may represent, and please begin when you're ready. Thank you.
Yeah. Hi, I'm Stephanie Todd. I live on Russell Island. Oh, sorry, I'm Stephanie Todd. I live on Russell Island at 75 Lewina Avenue. I've really actually just come to speak about the bushfires on the island that probably happened, about last year and the year before. And I acknowledge that there's been a report into this matter and the, to do with all the bushfires and things. But I actually live on the southern end of the island, and my sort of personal aspect is I live in a wooden house and I overlook Stradbroke Island. But there's about 100 residents in the area of the southern end of Russell Island. And we're a little bit vulnerable because at the moment there's only one exit ramp, and that's the commercial barge ramp at the top end of Russell Island. And down at the bottom end, I live 8 km, that's 8 km away from the other ramp. So in an emergency, if I do not have my car, I'm really in a pickle because I'm in a wooden house. I have 4 blocks of land around me that I own, but my escape route would be to go to Sandy Beach at this moment in time. Now, Sandy Beach, we cannot put a commercial barge or anything on there. So if you don't have your own boat, you're also just sort of waiting on the beach to see what would happen if there was a bushfire. Now, I'm not criticising the bushfire response team or the report. It's excellent. But it's just that the southern end of Russell Island, we would really like to see a second commercial boat ramp, or the consideration of the, as suggested by the chairman of the Moreton Bay Combined Islands Association chairman, is that we put maybe a cable barge service at the southern end of Russell Island, which would actually help evacuate not just the southern tip where I live, but probably that whole half of the island, which everyone does know that's rapidly growing population that we can't even keep the statistics aren't even correctly showing how many people are actually living there right now. But at the moment, it also was highlighted by the Redland City Bulletin that a barge got stuck on Russell Island recently, about a month ago, and that it was stuck there for more than 15 hours. And this did affect business on the island. It affected the shops. And a lot of people lost food that went off waiting for the barge to come back on. And that's, unfortunately, I know that the council isn't totally responsible for waterways and it's a state priority, but I feel that council needs to, and behalf of the public, we need to sort of get the state government aware of the fact that one barge for an island, a growing population on Russell Island of probably 8,000 or near, will need the consideration of a second barge or a second boat ramp, a commercial boat ramp for Russell Island. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Stephanie. I haven't been advised of anybody else who wishes to speak. If there's anyone out there, please raise your hand now. Nope. Okay. Can I have a mover and seconder, please, that the meeting proceedings resume? Move, Councillor Bishop. Seconded, Councillor Golay. All those in favour? Thank you. Petitions and presentations. Councillor Gleeson, I've been advised that you have a petition.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. I have a petition from a resident of St Luke's Court requesting no parking of cars during school drop-off and pick-up times. And the petition's of operational nature, and I move that the petition is of an operational nature and be received and referred to the CEO for consideration.
I'd first like to make an inquiry in regards to, and referring to officers in regards to this, we have an item 11.1.5, which is the review of the appointment of Deputy Mayor. Is it my understanding is once that is resolved, and if there is an alternate Deputy Mayor appointed, does that mean the we have to have a change during the meeting, or is that the new Deputy doesn't have to take the chair during this meeting?
If there was going to have to be a change, I was going to suggest we make the order.
Yeah, agree. Thanks, Councillor Edwards. You probably would need to change the chairing of this meeting, or Council could have another resolution to keep Councillor Bolgiari, depending on the outcome of that discussion, as the chair of this meeting today. But there would need to be another. It would be probably, if Council chooses to appoint a different Deputy Mayor, it would be probably easier to alter the order of business.
Councillor Elliott.
I don't know of any connection between the job of Deputy Mayor and chairing a meeting.
Andrew, I might ask you to... We did actually ask this question earlier.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Councillor, you're quite right. The law on this and the standing orders on this particular issue is a little bit grey. Certainly the practice is that the deputy stands is proxy for the mayor. The mayor chairs the meeting. The mayor's currently not here, and the deputy is the proxy chair. If council makes a decision at 11.1.6.5, as a matter of practice, the deputy as the chair would be replaced by the new deputy. We're trying to keep practice. Now, what we've suggested here is if you keep the current standing orders, you'd also make a second resolution to either retain the chair, the existing chair at the present, who's done a fantastic job, may I say. Otherwise, you move that item to the end of the meeting. It's just a matter of more a matter of practice as opposed to law.
No, don't want to dwell on it, but if suddenly the deputy mayor fell ill, and are we ruddled with us?
You know, exactly.
This seems silly to me.
You'd make a resolution saying the member. The chair, currently Councillor Bolgiari, would remain as chair for the remainder of the meeting. If you wanted to keep the current standing order, you'd just make another resolution to say the existing chair, Councillor Bolgiari, remain as the chair of the meeting.
Can we do that at that time?
Yeah, the time of that item. Keep it simple.
I'll put on my microphone. Councillors are reminded of their responsibilities under the Local Government Act 2009 in relation to a councillor's material personal interest or conflict of interest about a matter to be discussed at a meeting, and a summary of the responsibilities are included in the agenda. Then we move on to item number 11. And 11.1.1, our very exciting March 2018 monthly financial report. Can I have a mover and seconder, please?
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. Yes, I'd like to move 11.1.1, the March 2018 monthly financial report. Thank you.
And a seconder, Councillor Golay. Thank you. Were there any questions, or would we like a... Yes, Councillor Hughes.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. I'd like to comment on this favourable report. Our operating position year-to-date at March is favourable to the budget, as noted in the executive summary, by $2.8 million, which has been driven by the early receipt of grant money for the Roads to Recovery program of $2.2 million, and that has improved our revenue. We have an underspend in contractor and consultant costs, that have helped reduce the costs by $3.1 million, with a focus on our capital works in progress, including capitalisation of $13.8 million for the Point Lookout Wastewater Treatment Plant this year, together with the Asset Revaluation Program. This has contributed to an increase in our depreciation, Deputy Mayor, of over the budget of $2.7 million. So combined, the different departments have all come together. We've been very aware of our needs to meet our budget sets, and they have exceeded those. Thank you.
Good. Were there any speakers for or against, or further comments? Councillor Edwards?
Yes, it's probably for the CFO. Is the in relation to operating deficit, I note that the favourable variance is in part to some operating grants and subsidies incomes of approximately $2 million, so I assume they will carry forward because they were unexpected. The timing of the 2.28 grant, well, that won't have any effect leading to the year to date, and we do have favourable variance in our water, bulk water of $600,000. So, assuming there's approximately $2.5 million there extra revenue that we weren't anticipating, will that flow on through to our end-of-year financial figures for June? So we could perhaps we can account for what I'm getting at is we're probably going to be in a position of $2 million plus, if there's nothing else, ahead of where we're originally estimated would be in the budget.
I'll ask Richard Cahill, who's the Acting Chief Financial Officer, to reply to you.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Thanks, Councillor Edwards. The Roads to Recovery grant money was actually budgeted. During the budget process, we do try to estimate roughly when we think we're going to receive that money. So, in this case, we've received it earlier than what we thought. We'll only budget where we know that we are going to receive the money. So to answer your question, at year end, the timing will negate that. So at year end, there won't be a favourable impact because we've budgeted for the receipt of that in a later month.
I did say that was separate. What I was referring to is the other operating grants and subsidy incomes of $1.97 million above the budget, and also the bulk water of $600,000. They were the two figures I was referring to, not one, because I knew that was just a timing issue, those other ones here.
With the bulk water, firstly, currently, again, we try to estimate usage through the year. As we're all aware, we've had quite a bit of rain recently, so our usage estimate has, or our actual usage is below the estimate that we thought. Will that flow through to the end of the year? Potentially it will, obviously depending on weather conditions, but that is a potential that we will carry that favourable balance forward. With the operating grants and subsidies, the extra 1.97 above budget, again, I would consider that a timing issue as well. We still, we will only budget if we know we're going to receive that money. We won't take a guess. Pretty conservative in that place. No.
Were there any further comments? I'll pass back to Councillor Hughes to sum up.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. I'd like to move the officer's recommendation that Council resolves to note the financial position, results and ratios for March 2018 as presented. Thank you.
All those in favour? Unanimous, and Councillor Gleeson just happens to be out of the room at the moment. We move on to 11.1.2, Corporate Policy Application of Wastewater Charges Policy Review. Sorry. Can I have a mover and seconder? Thank you. Move Councillor Bishop, seconded Councillor Hughes. Councillor Bishop.
Thank you, Madam Deputy Mayor and Chair. I'd just like to move the officer's recommendation that Council resolve to note the review of Corporate Policy POL3027, application of wastewater charges, and to adopt the amendment corporate policy.
Were there any for again or comment, Councillor Tolte?
A question?
Yes, certainly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is just a quick question. I did send it through yesterday, but Deb's away and I didn't get a response. It's just my reading of it. I just wanted a clarification, please. I won't go to the park, it'll take too long. In the case of retirement villages, it speaks to having a 25-unit charge for the first pedestal and I think a 10 or a 15-unit charge for the second pedestal. I just wasn't clear whether that meant that the first pedestal is basically connection, you know, could be in the games room or whatever, and then the unit charge for each little individual dwelling unit in the retirement village is just the 15 units, or whether an elderly couple in a little unit with two pedestals would be getting both the 25 and the 15. I just would like clarification on that, please.
Okay, I'll refer that to hands up. Richard? Yep, okay.
Thanks through you, Madam Chair. I'll need to take that on notice and get back to you on that one.
Okay, were there any other questions or queries on that one? Nope, I'll pass back to Councillor Bishop.
Nothing further to add.
In that case, we'll put the motion. All those in favour? Unanimous. We'll move on to 11.1.3, the Fire Management Review Report. Can I have a mover, please? Councillor Edwards, seconder. Councillor Bishop, Councillor Edwards.
I've moved the officer's Fire Management Review Report update. I've moved the officer's recommendation to note the progress of the report.
And would you like to speak to that?
I believe our General Counsel, Andrew Ross, was going to give us an update on the progress.
Thank you, Andrew.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Councillor. Yes, I did chair the working group of officers that come from six different work streams. This is Council's second report on the progress of the implementation of the Fire Management Review. The review was born out of the background, if you like, as the respective member of the public raised from fires back in 2006, November and December, on both Maclay and Russell Island. After those fires, Council went to the Queensland Fire and Emergency Services to audit Council's fire management framework. It came up with 56 recommendations. As you can see from the current report, over 50% of those recommendations are complete, and our aim is to complete the majority of those recommendations before the next fire season, which is October this year. Can I say some key activities over the last few months? Certainly we've been focused on different areas. Infrastructure has been a key part of that. That's access to water, fire hydrants, access to removing waste and rubbish, clearing, backburning. For example, in terms of backburning, I believe there's been about 50 hectares that have been backburned. That's not only on the island, that's actually on the mainland as well, and it stretches from Redland Bay, Mount Cotton, Sheldon, Alex Hills, up to Birkdale. We do see this as a whole of council approach, principally focused on the Simbi Islands. Also highlighted, thankfully, by the community, is that this is not only a council responsibility. This is a multi-government, multi-agency responsibility, and in fact, of those 56 recommendations, about half of those are joint responsibilities. So in terms of multi-agency response, we heard some fantastic news at the beginning of this month, and that is the federal funding of the telecommunications black spot. So we have two new towers proposed for southern Russell Island and southern Stradbroke Island. Now, I understand we'll watch and wait in terms of that construction. We won't wait. We'll get those commitments, I understand. We'll work with our partners for that to occur, as said, within the next 12 months. How that relates to fire, that relates to disaster planning, disaster management, disaster alerts that will help us work with our stakeholders in terms of first response, but also in community. Also in terms of that multi-agency response, for the first time the police have appointed a police marine coordinator. There's various bodies and volunteer agencies in that marine environment. A coordinator in the Moreton Bay Marine Park in our particular area is important, and that's a newly appointed position. We also know recently, late last month, early this month, was the upgrade of the infrastructure down at the Coast Guard facility at Redland Bay. Improving those facilities will obviously lead to improved services. Also, those facility improvements were the pontoon and the telecommunications. Another key stream of this activity is the community engagement. Pros and cons of that, certainly that involves better information sheets, better signage, better fact sheets, clearly understanding what the legal provisions are, but also working collaboratively on resolving fire risks, and that is about managing our property together, being a good neighbour. In that regard, we look at both council land, private land and state land. That's a key part of our activity moving forward over the next 6 months. Also really making sure all of these initiatives we're talking about are not new. They're actually part of our business as usual, but we're really putting a lot of effort into making sure that they are delivered. Our next report back to council will be in October 2018. That's the brief summary of where we're at the moment.
You're right, Councillor Edwards.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you, Andrew. I'd just like to add a couple of things. Is that protecting ourselves from fire is a holistic responsibility for everybody. Everybody's got a role to play. Myself, looking after all of us and our own properties, and council, federal, state, everybody. I'm pleased to see that we are making progress. In response to a couple of issues that were raised, I do understand at Sandy Beach that the ferry companies, their boats can actually go up to the beach and front load. They're jet powered, so they're, in the case of evacuation, they will be available to go there. As far as a short barge route, well, I'm probably biased there because I've been banging on for trying to get a short barge route before I even came into this role. And unfortunately, there hasn't been the appetite from any commercial operator to take that on, and nor has there been the appetite for the state government, which controls the waterways, to put in any infrastructure to allow that to happen. I still don't give up hope that something like that might happen in the future, but as far as this work is concerned, I wouldn't like people to be reliant to think that that's going to happen any stage soon. But I'm glad the council's taking this seriously, as they've always done, and I understand that coming into winter we're going to have more fire burns are going to occur, subject to weather, and that's the best time to have them, not in summer. So, thank you.
Thank you. I've got Councillor Hewlett, Councillor Hughes and Councillor Tolte, so I'll just open it up to informal comments and queries, I think. Councillor Hewlett?
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. I'm not going to say anything because I just realised what I might be saying may be commercial in confidence, so I've decided to withhold it until later. Thank you.
Councillor Hughes?
Thank you, Deputy Mayor, and through you to our General Counsel, Andrew, potentially. Just clarifying, in the report, page 13 of the report, number 4 at the top, we've got 150 non-compliant properties that we've identified seeking owner cooperation. Can we just drill down on that a little more? From a perspective of compliance, how are we managing that? Thank you, Andrew.
Yeah, through the compliance regime, the standard process is request compliance. Comply with the law, comply with the requirements of what that law requires. So the majority of those proactive compliance matters are relating to either overgrown allotments. So in that regard, there's usually a request that it gets mowed and gets put on a regular mowing scale scheme. And secondly, the other major stream is unlawful structures, unapproved structures. So that's really just making sure if you do have structures in those areas, make sure they're constructed in accordance with the building requirements and using building materials that are not flammable, and you have proper buffer areas around those and access to and from.
Thank you, that's really well said. And in point five, the second sentence, and you just referred to multi-agency responses, and you were saying there are proposed to clear 115 new areas at mainland, and you just spoke to that with the 50 hectares of council being coordinating of that. When we talk multi-agency responses, who exactly is doing that in our city? Thanks.
Yeah, so the two key organisations are the Queensland Fire and Emergency Services, they have and also the rural fire services.
In conjunction with council. So who's leading that? Thank you.
So this particular action is council's leading that for council's properties. We don't do backburning on state property.
Thank you.
Just on that one, Andrew, wasn't there recently another Simbi clean up your backyard and everything? One just started?
I think it's actually, I don't know about starting or just simply continuing.
Oh, just continuing, right. I thought I saw a new brochure on it just recently again.
No, quite correct, Madam Chair. There is a new brochure. Officers are out there. I think I'll probably be out there out the next month as well.
Okay, Councillor Tolte.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to commend the officers. I think the work that's done so far has been fantastic. The communication that's been done with the islanders in particular has been very good. I'd encourage more of that. There's still a general feeling on the islands that I perceive that they don't know as much of what's being done, and there is a general thought that there's not enough backburning and that kind of thing. So perhaps a little bit more education on when that backburning can and should and will occur might help to allay that concern. But generally speaking, council seems always to work at its best when we've got a good coordinating body managing different departments to work together in the same direction. And we all of our departments work very hard and achieve very good results. But when we've got someone coordinating them all together, we seem to always get the best results. So I think that's a great step forward. I, of course, want to see more on the mainland as well, but we'll hold that space.
Thank you. Was there any other comments or anything? Yes, Councillor Bishop.
Absolutely endorsing the views expressed by other councillors in relation to the work by officers. Also, the multi-agency response I think is very noteworthy. And I think it's also important to acknowledge that this doesn't get done for free. This costs a significant amount of money. This is about saving lives and property, and as a result of having one of the largest areas of vegetation, and we did receive a report many years ago talking about the potential for the bushfire hazard in our area. This is a cost that our residents are needing to pay for. It's not done on the cheap. This is really important stuff. So I just think it's important that the residents are aware that this is one of the daily activities that officers are busy with that is operational, and that has a burden on all of us. We do live in a heavily vegetated area, and managing that in a way that is in accordance with expectations for disaster management and emergency preparedness has a price associated with it. So I'd like to thank the residents and their contribution. They might not see it, but it is saving lives, and thankfully all that multi-agency response gets us out of the disaster, but preparedness is critical, and it does cost money. So just acknowledging that. Thanks.
Thank you, and I'd also just like to extend my thanks. I see Mike sitting in the back there from our local disaster management team. It's not just Mike, it's everyone else that surrounds him, but when we do have a disaster in Redlands, whether it be fire or whatever, these guys are, my phone is buzzing before it's even on the news or anywhere, so we've got a great team that is actually well respected and called on throughout Queensland for our expertise. So I know that they're on top of this at all our meetings that we have, our local disaster management meetings. There's always updates from all the various services, and the collaboration and everything between everybody. It's a lesson for everybody, I think. So, yep, well done, Mike, to you and your team, and keep up the great work. And I'll hand back to Councillor Edwards.
No, nothing further to add.
Okay, so with that, we'll just put the motion. All in favour? Unanimous. Thank you very much. And we'll move on to 11.1.4, the amended policy for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander and community policy. Can I have a mover, Councillor Bishop? And a seconder, Councillor Hughes. Councillor Bishop?
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. Madam Chair, I'd just like to move 11.1.4, the amended policy 3081, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander community policy. Just remove the officer's recommendation that Council resolves to adopt the amended policy as attached. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Tolte, is that a four or just a question? A question, yes, Councillor Tolte. Yep, okay, I'll let Councillor Bishop speak to it then and then...
Yeah, thanks very much. I'd just like to acknowledge the work that officers have done, and also just their paying attention to the decade since this policy was originally adopted. There have been some significant changes, not only in this city, but also through the High Court determination of the Quandamooka people's native title rights that needed to be reflected in a policy for council. Also, more broadly, the acknowledgement of the actual people of the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders, who are a distinct people as opposed to Indigenous. So just those sorts of terms have been referred to, and I think it's also important to acknowledge that a policy like this is a broad stakeholding document for many, many, many groups that are across the spectrum of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people who do live within our city and relate within our city. So it's a broad custodial document that I'd like to thank our officers for drafting. Thank you.
I'm happy just to go into questions unless anyone wants to do a formal for and against. No? Happy to go into just question time, councillors? Yep. Okay. Councillor Tolte.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The purpose of this document is to update Council's policy and to ensure that we support our underlying principles of being open and honest and respectful in regard to our communication with everyone. This document speaks to the Ilyuwa and the land rights determination. Are those documents going to be attached to this when it's published as a policy on our website?
If I can just answer that. Thank you, Madam Chair. Firstly, there is a clarification in the document. I might speak to that first. I should speak into the microphone. Thank you, Councillor. There are some minor administrative corrections we'll do to the policy. If I might just say that you'll see on page 1 of 2 in the policy, it refers to the Uluburaba peoples. It's actually the Quandamooka people. So there are some minor changes. It doesn't affect the adoption of the policy, but there are some minor changes to that. In terms of making, if you like, the Indigenous Land Use Agreement public, if that's the nature of the question, no, that won't happen. That's a confidential document. The Council's bound by the terms of that document to keep it confidential unless... there's parts of it that might be released, but that'll be subject to confidentiality or consent by the Quandamooka people.
So have we asked?
So at the moment I have sent the policy to the representatives of Quandamooka. I haven't, and we'll raise that our business days, I believe, later this month, next month. So at the moment, no, the Indigenous Land Use Agreement wouldn't be made public at the moment.
Is it public anywhere, Andrew, on the court system?
No, not that I'm aware. There's a general summary of it on the Native Title Tribunal that was published at the time back in 2011. It talks about the area of the determination, broadly speaks about the rights and interests, broadly speaks about non-exclusive rights, water rights, but it doesn't publish the Indigenous Land Use Agreement itself.
Perhaps we could publish that as an addendum to this, so that at least I just feel that the community, when they read this, are going to want to know what we're talking about.
So I can answer that part. There is on Council's website a reference to that material together with a question and answer fact sheet. We referred to that website together with those Q&A fact sheets on the... We currently have two native title claims over Redlands, and those reports were presented in the last 4 months, and we constantly refer to that website information.
Thank you, Councillor Tolte. Were there any other queries, questions, or I'll just pass back to Councillor Bishop?
I just put the motion.
Oh, yours got answered. Thank you, Councillor Hughes.
Just put the motion. Thank
put
you.
Put the motion. All those in favour? Those against? Okay. Those division. Those in favour are Councillor Bishop, Councillor Tolte, Councillor Hughes, Councillor Elliott, Councillor Edwards, Councillor Hewlett, Councillor Golay, Councillor Boglari. Those against? Councillor Gleeson. Thank you. We move on to 11.1.5, review of appointment of Deputy Councillor Elliott. Your hand was... Yeah. Is this your amended motion, Councillor Elliott?
Do you want me to read it out?
Yes. Well, is it your motion?
Yep. 11.1.5, review of the appointment of Deputy Mayor. The Office of Recommendation be accepted with the amendments in 2 and 3.
It resolves Wendy Boglari be appointed as Deputy Mayor in the first paragraph. And that's
yes.
That
well, if you were here yesterday, Councillor,
that was
explained.
That we did in 2017. Yeah. But that's not the proposed motion.
Could I ask the CEO explain that, please, to Council?
Yep.
So the first point of this resolution states that there was a resolution at the general meeting of the 10th of May 2017 to appoint Councillor Wendy Boglari as Deputy Mayor for a period of 1 year and to conduct a review, but secondly, that Council declares that position to be vacant. So Council can declare the Deputy Mayor position to be vacant at any time. So this first point declares the position vacant.
You're moving that, Councillor Elliott?
I am.
Is there a seconder to that motion? Councillor Hughes? Speakers for? Oh, Councillor Elliott, sorry, yep.
Thank you. Nearly passed, Deputy Mayor. I think this is timely. We've... done it. It's a bit of a change doing what year by year, something like that. I'm sure Councillor Hewlett will do an excellent job in the role. I know it's only for a year. I'd support longer, but a year is fine. I'd like to. I can't. I'll the umpire. Well, can I say it'll be out till the end of that time? Then we can review performance. But I'd like to firstly congratulate you on the work you've done as the Deputy Mayor. And I've seen many deputy mayors come and go, and I've been one. And you've certainly done an excellent job. You've been out there in the public and done a great job showing this council how it's done. Certainly you've held yourself well, in good stead. My community recognises you well, knows you well around the place. You've certainly done a far, far better job than any deputy mayor, including myself. And it's a high bar you've set, so I look forward to Councillor Hewlett taking over and trying to achieve that as well. Thank you.
Thanks, Councillor. Councillor Tolte. Yep, speaker against.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Look, I'd like to start by supporting some of the statements that Councillor Elliott made and congratulating you on the effort that you've made as Deputy Mayor. You've worked very hard and you have been working very hard towards unity of this council and being fair and supportive of everyone, and I think you've done a very good job. And I would have been happy to support you to go on for another 2 years. With regard to the motion before us, as to the appointment of a new Deputy Mayor, I'd like to take a moment to remind councillors of the responsibilities under the Local Government Act. Chapter 3, Ethical Behaviour and Decision Making. Councillors are bound at all times by provisions of the Local Government Act. Councillors are, under the Act, required to provide for transparent and effective processes and decision making in the public interest.
while ensuring ethical and legal behaviour of councillors and the local government's employees. In Chapter 3.1, it speaks to the primacy of the public interest and provides that, in particular, councillors need to be mindful of serving and representing the overall public interest when making decisions for and for the benefit of their communities. In the event of a conflict between the public and the private interest of a councillor and all associates, a related person, the overall public interest must prevail. The CMC in 2009 characterised these responsibilities as follows. In the area of a conflict of interest, perception is all important. The established test is an objective one, namely whether a reasonable member of the public properly informed would feel that the conflict is unacceptable. Essentially, it means that such a reasonable member of the public would conclude that inappropriate factors could influence an official action or decision. Because the test is an objective one, it matters not whether you as an individual are convinced that with your undoubted integrity, you can manage what would otherwise be an unacceptable conflict of interest. The test does not permit you as an individual to be a sounding board. The appearance of a conflict of interest may be as serious as an actual conflict of interest because it may reduce public confidence in the integrity of the office that is held. With regard to the decision as to who should fill the role of Deputy Mayor, I've always held and continue to hold that the person must have the skills for the position and be the candidate favoured by the Mayor for whose support they are nominated. And I have no doubt that Councillor Hewlett, if he is elected today, will do a very good job. He will represent the Mayor and he will do it to the best of his ability. I hope that he will measure up to the bar that you've set as Deputy Mayor. However, unfortunately, as we've heard today from the Minister, the ends does not justify the means. And unfortunately, this decision before has been tainted by secret backroom discussions done by some members of this chamber prior to the last election.
Point of order. Thank you, Councillor Tolte. Councillor Elliott, what is your point of order?
Councillor Tolte is alleging backroom deals have been done. It's slurring my character.
I can confirm that they have been done.
Madam Mayor.
I would withdraw it.
I can confirm that they were done.
Councillor Tolte, if you could just talk to the actual motion on the board, please.
I'd like it withdrawn.
A deal to ensure support for...
I want that slur withdrawn on councillors.
I'm not withdrawing, Madam Mayor, I'm sorry. The position carries with an additional payment of some $10,000 per year.
Councillor Tolte.
Councillor Tolte is trying to turn this into a circus. That's all she's trying to do. She will never be the Deputy Mayor, trust me.
Perfectly fine with me, Madam Chair.
Really? You couldn't even get the numbers to get them last council to get it.
Madam Chair, how are these statements acceptable?
Councillor Elliott. Councillor Elliott. Councillor Elliott and Councillor Tolte. I'm actually asking both of you to remember what the Minister did say, that the ends does not justify the means. I've always tried, while I've been in this position and as a councillor, to put my own personal differences and opinions aside and think of the reputation of the council as a whole. So, Councillor Tolte, I'm going to let you proceed, but I would like you also to think of what the Minister said about the bigger picture, integrity, and moving forward, have respect for other councillors in the room.
Oh, I have a complete respect, Madam Chair, for the process. Having now been made aware that not only was this agreement struck, but that some in the room have been put under considerable pressure to stick to their deal...
Councillor Tolte, I'm now going to pull you up.
I consider that...
Councillor Tolte, I'm pulling you up. I will not let comments like that be said. Thank you.
Well, this is my belief. If you can prove otherwise, then fine.
I won't let you continue.
I choose to remove myself from the chamber and declare that an ethical conflict of interest. I encourage anyone else who does not support the decision for this vote, having been made 2 years ago in a clandestine meeting of councillors and candidates prior to the last election, to leave with me. And I challenge those of you who choose to stay to not to apply further pressure and bullying tactics to any councillors that leave the room.
Councillor Tolte.
Madam Chair, I will thank you to recall me at the conclusion of this motion. Thank you.
Fine. Is there a speaker for the motion? Councillor Bishop, we're speaking to four and against. Councillor Bishop.
Well, it's unfortunate that one of our peers has chosen to vacate the chair at a point when we need to, as a collective body of 11 representatives, speak on behalf of the people of this city. Can I ask, if I may, through you, Deputy Mayor, as Chair, to the CEO or someone in governance to describe the actual responsibilities of the Deputy Mayor and how many... just so that residents are aware, it's a figurehead role. And the undertaking to take on the role of Deputy Mayor is, as a representative, in the absence of the Mayor, to officiate, but the delegation does not extend to executive powers. As I understand it, can we have that clarified, please? Because it is the point of some conjecture and discussion in the community. I think it's important that we, if possible, have some clarification on that.
Yep.
Because I think one of the points that was raised is, by Councillor Tolte, by reading from the Act, is that we all have the responsibility to uphold the highest morals, virtues, and address conflicts of interest, and to be collegiate in doing so. So I totally support another councillor taking on the opportunity to represent this city in a figurehead role, and if I can just ask for some clarification as to the distinction between the role of Mayor and Deputy Mayor.
Yes, I'll ask the CEO.
Councillor and Deputy Mayor. The Local Government Act stipulates that a Deputy Mayor role must, by resolution of Council, be made and declared. If written notice is given, which has been given to councillors, that role's to be fulfilled. The role of Deputy Mayor doesn't have specific delegations or legislative duties. The Deputy Mayor may be called upon by the Mayor to exercise powers and functions of the Mayor when the Mayor is absent, when that permission is given in writing, and appoints the Deputy Mayor to act in that position. The Mayor can also ask the Deputy Mayor to carry out various civic duties and ceremonial functions on behalf of the mayoral office.
Thank you. And with that undertaking on behalf of any Deputy Mayor, I would like to, first of all, thank you very much, Deputy Mayor Wendy Boglari, in your current position in the last 2 years, not only having been a councillor of incredible integrity and always standing up for the values and rights of the representatives of your constituents, but doing that across the entire city has come at, you know, an enormous cost to you that you've gracefully committed to. Thank you very much. And at the declaration of this vote, which is done by a show of hands in a public platform, that I find it abominable that a councillor has removed themselves from that situation, but c'est la vie, as the French theatricals say. I'd like to wish all the very best to Councillor Hewlett as he takes on this role, and also acknowledge that it is in everyone's best interest, certainly the Mayor and the residents of this city and councillors and officers, that whatever support is necessary is given, and I would hope that would be forthcoming should that be needed. And thank you very much to both of you, and all the best. I know the community will be looking forward to the best for this city, and that's what this role is all about.
Thank you, Councillor Bishop. Councillor Gleeson. Gather you're speaking against.
Against, Chair. Okay, I'll start off. Firstly, congratulations. I think you've done a pretty fair sort of a job too, Councillor Boglari.
That's high praise coming from you.
I know. Indeed, probably better than I thought 2 years ago, so I'll leave that one there. I probably wouldn't go as far as Councillor Elliott and say that the best. I mean, I thought Councillor Beard was fantastic as a Deputy Mayor and probably did a great job. I will be speaking, I'm against this whole proposal. As has been discussed, this decision has been predetermined beforehand.
Point of order.
Councillor Elliott.
Councillor Gleeson's passing dispersions on other councillors.
Councillor Gleeson, I will ask you to keep
point. Well, I can explain. Councillor Elliott has already mentioned that Councillor Hewlett will be the Deputy Mayor. We haven't gotten to that point in the motion yet.
Oh,
so clearly it's been predetermined.
I think that...
I think that's just Councillor Elliott being optimistic. I do not take that as a definite. Believe me, I've been in this room for 10 years. Nothing is definite until you see the hands going up and it's in a minute.
I don't believe my community wants a deputy mayor who splits up blocks below 400 square metres.
Point of order. Sorry. I'll let you do the point of order. Sorry, Councillor Elliott.
Who wants to do it?
Point of order. You know, the councillor's casting aspersions on Councillor Hewlett's integrity here.
Yep.
You know, this guy.
I won't let you cast aspersions either, thank you, Councillor. And I will ask you to withdraw that last comment, thank you, Councillor Gleeson.
I don't think it's fact, I don't think there's need to withdraw it.
Yeah, but you've said it in a way that it gives the insinuation that it wasn't allowed. It was a planning scheme. It's quite allowed, and there was no need to cast any aspersion on it because there was absolutely nothing incorrect.
I'll withdraw it then.
Thank you.
I don't think my community want a deputy mayor that puts in so many frivolous complaints against other councillors.
Point of order.
Yes, Councillor Elliott.
The councillor's just casting aspersions. Why doesn't he just back up his bag and go?
No, Councillor Elliott. Councillor Gleeson, if someone puts in a complaint, then to them it isn't. So please, can you not cast any more aspersions against someone else's character?
Madam Chair, I believe this whole decision today lacks integrity. I won't be involved in it. I'll be abstaining from the vote as well, and ask if someone can notify me when the decision's done. Thank you.
Great, thank you. Is there a speaker for? For? Okay, well, we're still in for and against at the moment. Okay, so Councillor Golay and Councillor Edwards have comments.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I'm just going to quickly address one of the allegations that was made by one of the councillors about a predetermined vote.
Councillor Golay,
this matter.
Can we just stick to this, please? I don't want to give any more airtime to rubbish. There's no parliamentary privilege in our chambers. And I'm just advising you.
Thank you. With the greatest respect, this matter has been discussed for the last 2 weeks, not in a formal capacity, and it was actually tabled for discussion by the Mayor herself. And the two councillors who have left the chambers took part in those discussions. So by making an allegation that there's been some sort of predetermined outcome, then they have very much taken part in those predetermined outcomes, if that's what they are driving at. Every councillor had the opportunity to nominate or to talk about or discuss the pros and cons, including changing out the deputy mayor position and what the ramifications meant. We are now in a general meeting where all the facts have been placed on the table, and right up until this morning, under advisement from the mayor, where the Deputy Mayor took the initiative to discuss with her to actually leave this lay on the table and not discuss it until there was a full board and complement of councillors. There's been great initiative and responsibility taken in the importance of selecting this role, and I find it absolutely absurd and absolutely abhorrent that two of my colleagues have decided to grandstand on this matter and make out as if there's some sort of backroom deal. This has been discussed for at least about 2 weeks. And it was discussed and discussed and discussed, even seeking advice from our governance department and the CEO's office. So by the allegations being made, that also implies that our ELT are somehow involved in some sort of a backroom deal as well. And I find that absolutely abhorrent.
Thank you. Councillor Edwards, comment?
Yes. Deputy Mayor, I'm very, very, very disappointed that you didn't put yourself forward to be nominated to continue on the role, because I think you've done an excellent job, and I think you can hold your head up high that you've put all your own personal resources into performing the role for the best for this city. And nobody should take the fact that we have somebody else who's putting their hand up that there's any way a reflection that you've done a your job is anything less than excellent. So thank you for the work you've done. I only see one person putting their hand up for nomination for Deputy Mayor. No, I haven't put my hand up. No one else here is today, so we have one candidate. But what I'd just like to say is a word of advice, I suppose. Whilst we might say it's a figurehead role, it's a very important role. And when the Mayor's not there, the Deputy must represent the Mayor 100%. So I hope that that will still continue, that we keep in mind that a Deputy Mayor reflects the Mayor, who's voted by the whole of the city. And it's important, probably the most challenging role for a Deputy Mayor is sitting in the seat that you currently do at a general meeting and keeping control and order and enforcing standing orders. Sometimes I feel standing orders could perhaps be enforced with greater rigour, but it's a very difficult role to have. So I would congratulate Councillor Hewlett for nominating, and if you're successful in the role, I hope that you look for the high standards that Councillor Bulgari has set, and please keep in mind the role is representing the Mayor 100%.
Thank you, Mark. Are there any other comments for Councillor Hewlett?
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. I just wanted to say I'm honoured and privileged to be nominated as the Deputy Mayor. I think it's a position that I will hopefully stand up to the level that Councillor Bulgari has raised. And I must say your work ethic and your integrity is unsurpassed. I remember the first day I started in council, it was Councillor Bulgari that came to me in my office, not knowing my political agenda, not knowing what I wanted to do, and she offered nothing but support. And I thank her greatly for that, and she's become, I think she's a great leader and she's a great friend, and I appreciate what she's done. Of course, I'm disappointed by the circumstances of this meeting, but I tend to work with all of my colleagues openly and collaboratively, and work with the Mayor. I take it as an honour to represent the Mayor in the cases that I have to do so. I think it's a privilege to work with the officers in this chamber and the officers within this organisation. I consider my own position as a councillor a privilege. To be elected by your community, to me, is an enormous privilege. And I've learnt a lot in the last 6 years I've been here. I congratulate Wendy on her 10 years, as I did recently. And it has been a massive learning curve. And you know, there's things that the public think that we can do that we can't do. And it has been a massive learning curve for me, but I've been supported by a brilliant team, and I think this team is brilliant and we are capable of great things. And again, I just say thank you so much for this nomination, and I hope I can do the job, if elected, respectfully. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other comments before I pass back to Councillor Elliott? Without becoming emotional, I'd like to say a few words. I guess the fact that I'm struggling to talk lets you know how honoured I have been to have this position. When I was elected in 2008, I thought, oh my gosh, what have I done? I was so insecure, and I had councillors at that time who supported me, and I made a pledge to myself that any other new councillor or anybody that came in, I would always give that support to, because I know how vital that was to me. I've always been community-minded, but I can tell you after 10 years of working with our Redlands community, I am more passionate than ever about our beautiful Redlands and our people. To say I was honoured to then become Deputy Mayor is an understatement. I remember the day I became Deputy Mayor 2 years ago, going home and getting a cup of coffee and sitting on my front steps with my dog and having a heart-to-heart with my dear Zara about just how blessed am I, how amazing is this that I've got this opportunity to extend my self-development and extend my influence and everything else. But I think there's a responsibility as a leader that you don't grandstand and you don't grasp every opportunity for yourself. You allow others to also come on that journey with you and have a chance to have those experiences. In my first term of council, there were two deputy mayors, and I said at that time I thought that was fair, that two people had the chance to have that self-development and learning to be alongside the mayor. Last term, I remember saying how disappointed I was when the same person got it twice. So it would be very hypocritical of me now to continue when I do agree that you have to share opportunities. And I'm committed to what I thought back in my first term of council, to let somebody else come on board and get that self-development. I would have preferred all councillors to have been here, and I have talked to the mayor via email about this, because when it was coming up today, none of us realised that herself and Councillor Mitchell would be going to New Zealand this week for this very important tourism summit, because it's all on Indigenous tourism, which is exactly what we need at the moment at Stradbroke. So we talked, and yes, she definitely had to be there. And her email was, go ahead today. She was fine with, and I thank her for that trust in me to hold this meeting appropriately today. So thank you to my community, to the whole of Redlands. You're an amazing community. I've really, really enjoyed, I can't stress that, being Deputy Mayor and having that opportunity to speak to more people. I've enjoyed it so much I'll probably continue annoying people in other divisions, because I've struck up friendships and I don't want those friendships and lines of communication to end now. Going forward, if Councillor Hewlett is successful, you know, I'll be there annoying him, and if he needs a hand, I'm always here, and I hope every councillor realises that that is my stand, regardless of being Deputy Mayor or not. So I just wanted to explain why I didn't accept, like Councillor Edwards said, he was disappointed in me. I don't want anyone to be disappointed in me, please, because I feel this is the right thing to do, to give somebody else a chance for that self-development and not be greedy and try and continue myself. So thank you with all my heart for the last 2 years. And nothing's going to change anyway. It's only a badge, and I'm still going to be there to nag and help and get involved with everything anyway. So thank you. And thank you. And with that, I'll pass back to Councillor Elliott.
No, I won't give any sprays to people. I look forward to Lance and doing the Deputy Mayor's job as well as you've done it. So happy if you move it.
Thank you. And with that, I'll put the motion. Those in favour? Okay, and we'll just acknowledge it's unanimous. And Councillor Tolte and Councillor Gleeson are out of the room. Thank you. We'll move on. Congratulations, Lance. Not particularly. Some would like to advise Councillor Tolte and Councillor Gleeson if they want to join us, they're welcome. Okay, can I have a mover, please, for 11.1.6, nomination of councillors to attend the National Assembly. Move Councillor Elliott, seconded Councillor Edwards. Now, we don't need to put names in at this stage, I've been advised. So it's just moved as it is that the Mayor and one or more councillors can go. We don't have to make up our minds and get our diaries out. So is there any discussions on this one? No? Yes? Yes, that's right. Yeah, of course, that will be taken into account. Yeah. No, we've already discussed that, because there's a few people that like to go, but no one's really definite with diaries as yet as to who's available. So I did check yesterday, and we don't need to have names in there. So, yes, Councillor Bishop?
Yeah, I'd just like to say that in 2012, I went along and attended the first my first Australian Local Government Association National General Assembly. And it was very eye-opening, and I absolutely encourage councillors to go along, because the office of being an elected representative is a unique thing in itself, but to go and meet mayors and councillors from and and also executive staff from across this entire nation gives you an understanding of the way that the whole democratic system unveiled, that states came first, then councils, and then the federation, and also to understand that different councils in different states particularly do not pay their councillors a living wage. It's just a stipend, and it's a unique thing that helps us to understand that in Queensland the job that we do daily, turning up for the meetings, making the decisions, reading all of the emails, are things that others do as an honorarium. But here I think to understand the national system and the responsibility of office is just a very important thing, because it's not, it ain't tiddlywinks, and it's really good to see all the national issues up for discussion. Thank you.
Is there any further discussion on that one? No? I'll pass back to... Well, we'll put the motion. Those in favour? Passed unanimously. Thank you. So we'll move on to 11.2.1. Can I have a move for Councillor Elliott?
Yeah, 11.2.1, decision made under delegated authority. Move the opposite recommendation be accepted.
Seconder, Councillor Edwards. Any discussion for or against? Nope. Okay, I'll put the motion. Those in favour? Passed unanimously. We'll go on to 11.2.2, Planning Environment Court Matters. Can I have a move? Councillor Elliott.
Thank you. 11.2.2, Planning Environment Court Matters. Move the opposite recommendation be accepted.
Okay, no comment. Seconded, Councillor Bishop. Were there any other comments or anything on that one, or we'll just put the motion? All right, thank you. All those in favour? Passed unanimously. Thank you. 11.2.3, exemption of certain plumbing work. Can I have a mover, please? Councillor Tolte. And a seconder? Councillor Gleeson. Councillor Tolte.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just moved the officer's recommendation.
Councillor Edward, did you get your question answered yesterday? Yes, you did. Okay. Was there any for or against or comments? No? We'll just put the motion. All those in favour? Passed unanimously. We'll move on to 11.2.4. Can I have a mover, please? Councillor Elliott?
Excuse me, Madam Chair. Could we have the planning officer to explain the item?
Yep.
I believe he's in the room.
Yeah, we did ask yesterday, could they come forward, because there seemed to be questions. Okay, I've just had clarification on process. We've just got to get a seconder, and then we'll get Chris, if you wouldn't mind giving it the presentation on it. Seconded, Councillor Bishop. Thank you. Oh, I thought you did, sorry. Oh, okay, I apologise. Yeah, I thought you had. Sorry, Councillor Elliott. Well, I'm waiting for you now then. Can you move it? Is your speaker on?
That'll be loud enough. I'm just waiting for that to come up. I move the opposite recommendation not be accepted, and that the proposed motion that council resolves to refuse the applicant's request to reclassify the koala habitats and classification as a site as appropriately designated high value bushland habitat and medium value rehabilitation under Schedule 11 point Part 4 of Planning Regulation 2017.
Thank you. Seconder, Councillor Bishop. Yep. Now, we...
Sorry, point of order, Madam Chair. Is that not an amended motion? Does it have to be moved as an amended motion?
It's an
alternate
motion.
Councillor Elliott's proposing an amended motion. The officer's recommendation has not been accepted.
The amended motion. Yep. I think Councillor Gleeson was just saying you needed to say the word amended.
Clarifying, it wasn't the opposite recommendation.
It's amended. He said both in one sentence. But I'll pass to Chris to give a brief overview of it, please.
Is that what you'd like, Councillor Tolte?
Yes, please. And I was wondering if we could have for the gallery either item three, figure three or figure four, doesn't matter.
Yep, so they know what we're talking about.
So they can see it.
Yep.
Yeah.
If that's doable, have we got it there? Great, thank you. Just when you're ready, Chris, thanks.
Thanks, Madam Chair. So the application before Council is a request to reclassify the koala habitat on the subject site at 97 to 101 Unwin Road, Redland Bay. The koala habitat mapping is state mapping that's regulated under the planning regulation, Schedule 11, Part 4. So the applicant has an opportunity under that regulation to lodge a request for Council to consider a reclassification. So the applicant's requesting that the area, currently the site is classified as partly high-value bushland and partly medium-value rehabilitation habitat. The applicant's requesting that the site be reclassified as low-value rehabilitation habitat. The regulation defines what is bushland habitat and what is rehabilitation habitat. So what Council must consider is those two definitions and which does the subject site best fit in terms of the bushland habitat definition or the rehabilitation habitat definition. Officers consider that the subject site, which is sparsely vegetated, doesn't meet the bushland habitat definition, which is for closed canopy or open woodland that's contiguous to other bushland habitat and is more best fitting to the rehabilitation habitat. So the recommendation is that it be reclassified as medium value rehabilitation on the subject site.
That was very short. Councillor Tolte, did you have questions for Chris or further comments on that?
Whatever.
Oh, I will go for and against, and I was just being generous and letting Councillor Tolte have some informal time, but if you want to go straight into for and against, that's fine. For this recommendation, Councillor Elliott?
Pretty straightforward. I personally don't want to see the trees removed. I think some innovative. This is not about the subdivision. The subdivision's been in place since 2015.
Sorry, we're doing for and against, and Councillor Elliott's moving the motion. Doesn't he wrap up at the end?
After he's spoken to it.
Oh, sorry, this is the speaking to it?
Speaking
I'm sorry,
it
I thought.
He hasn't done that yet because I went straight into this presentation for you.
No, this subdivision, just for the community, has been done at 2015, and they've come back to get this, and I'm not supportive of it. I don't want to lose the trees. I think there's a couple of two blocks there. They probably have to do a bit of innovative design, but certainly I think it's quite achievable. And I said it's unnecessary at this stage. Thank you. And I feel that on the western end sort of thing, that if we did relax that, there'd be a further reconfiguration map lodged for further subdivision. I'm not supportive of that.
Against? Councillor Edwards?
Yeah, I believe what we should be doing is we debate exactly what is in the intent of the motion, and the motion is really making an assessment of whether this is, as it stands, high-value bushland or low-value rehabilitation habitat. And to me, that's just where it begins and ends. And the officers have gone through all the report and said that this is not high value. And in fact, we go to the Queensland Ecologist report, and the second paragraph summing up is, given the constraints to koala movement to and from the property and the reduced connectivity of the property to the wider landscape, the rehabilitation value of the property is considered to be low. If you go on, that probably doesn't do it justice, but if you go on Google Earth and go into there, that's almost like a bowling green around most of the place. It's very low habitat value there at all. So for me, I find it difficult to vote against the officer's recommendation when the facts tell me that it's not a high value. So that's why I'm opposed to the motion as has been amended.
Speaker for the motion. Now I'll just go into informal so that Councillor Tolte can speak.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not sure if Chris actually said it, but high-value habitat requires a canopy. And we can see from the aerial photo there that there is no canopy. There are no trees. There are not enough trees connecting to form a canopy. And I'm happy for the officer to explain that further. But we're basically, with this motion, voting to say that, you know, night is day or black is white or whatever you want. We may not like the possible future outcomes, and we may have to move to protect the trees in some other way, but this particular matter, and we're required to vote on the facts before us, is that this is not a canopy. There is no canopy there. Chris?
Through the chair. So page 35 of the report defines bushland habitat. So it identifies that bushland habitat is defined as land that is 2 hectares or more, or land that is less than 2 hectares but within 50 metres of bushland. So the subject site is less than 1 hectare and is more than 50 metres from high-value bushland, and must contain mainly forested areas of native vegetation, including areas ranging from closed canopy forest to open woodland. The subject site is very sparsely vegetated. There's no closed canopy. Canopies don't connect. Contains a variety of trees of the eucalyptus genus, typically used for koalas. There's one eucalyptus genus on the site, but not a variety of, and it's not a plantation forest. Page 35 and 36 then define rehabilitation habitat, which is areas of smaller, so on a lot of 0.5 hectares or more, which this site is. Contains native vegetation such as forested areas, scattered trees, areas of grass and bare surface, which this site better represents than the bushland habitat definition.
Yes, Madam Chair, I'm very torn with this because I would definitely like to be able to maintain the large trees that are there. I appreciate that with development, people don't want large gum trees close to their homes, and so some of them will have to go under the configuration that's already there. I would hope, and my simple assessment of it, that is that at least half of those trees should be able to be maintained under the development plan. And, you know, if given the opportunity, I'd like to ask planning if there's a way we can do that through conditioning the operational works or something like that. But I don't believe we can vote that something that this is something it's not because of a fear of what might happen in the future. Thank you.
So, Chris, I think the question there is, if this was to happen, how could the trees be protected? Oh, if this wasn't to happen, that was all. How are the trees to be protected?
Certainly. So the current approval for the 9-lot subdivision does require all 9 non-juvenile koala habitat trees to be retained. This proposed change application, which involves this reclassification, is a 2-part assessment process. The first of those is the reclassification request by the applicant to change from bushland to rehabilitation. The second part of that assessment is whatever decision council makes on that reclassification, the applicant has requested a change to the application to be able to remove those trees. That's still subject to an assessment. If council decides to retain the bushland habitat and the low-value rehabilitation, that condition will still remain. We'll be considering the change application against the bushland habitat criteria, where trees cannot be removed. Non-juvenile koala habitat trees cannot be removed. If council decides to reclassify as rehabilitation habitat, the assessment that's done as part of the request to change is the clearing of those trees unavoidable? If it's unavoidable, they can be cleared and offset through either a financial contribution or replanting. If through that assessment the clearing of those trees can be avoided, then those trees would be conditioned to be retained.
And that decision can come back to council. That can be that matter can be called up as a next decision. It doesn't have to be decided in this decision today.
That's right. It's through the chair. It's a separate decision and can be called in by council to make that decision.
Any further questions, Councillor Tolte? Okay. Councillor Golley, Councillor Hewlett.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Can we just bring up the photo where that subdivision that's existing is in the green, please? Yep, that's close enough. The subdivision that's there that's in the pink, is that fairly new?
You mean not in the subject site above it?
So in the pink, yeah, not on the subject site but above it, is that a fairly new subdivision? So despite any sort of regulations, etc., it would appear to me that there was bushland there that could have quite easily connected to a wildlife corridor, but because houses have actually now been built into it, we've now actually reduced the bushland. Well, irrespective of whether it's a farm,
can we let the councillor finish his question and then I'll have the officer answer, please?
Well, my point is that it was already, whether it was treed or not, it was already categorised as some form of a corridor or some sort of preserved site with an overlay that needed to be adjudicated on. Is that right or not?
Through the chair, the subdivision to the north was lodged and approved in 2008.
Mm-hmm.
So that was prior to the koala regulations coming in. So that mapping wasn't on that site at the time of approval.
Yeah. But essentially, when we talk about, well, there's no real high value, in essence, that estate has been allowed to build into what is predominantly would have been an overlay of protection in relation to a koala corridor or some sort of overlay, yeah?
Through the chair, but not at the time of the application and approval of that subdivision to the north.
Yeah, so my point is that despite the change in regulations at 2008, the fact is a development has been allowed to be built into an area that now has an overlay, and we're now trying to go, well, that last little bit of remnant is just not important, so it doesn't matter whether it's kept or not. It's sort of, to my mind, it's like piece by piece, we're just a little bit more, just a little bit more, a little bit more, and it's kind of, yeah, how long's a piece of string?
Councillor Hewlett?
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. So just a question to Chris. So the downgrading of this site to medium value basically just facilitates the owner to remove those trees. That's really what the outcome you think they're trying to achieve?
Through the chair, that's their proposal. It's not necessarily what the outcome will be. So their change application is to remove the nine trees. And they're seeking this reclassification in their mind to allow for that to happen. But that assessment still has to happen. If it is reclassified as rehabilitation, the regulation still requires that council must consider any unavoidable clearing cannot be cleared. Any avoidable clearing cannot be cleared. So if they can avoid clearing any of those nine trees, they can't clear them. Whether that's if it's defined as rehabilitation habitat. So that assessment still needs to take place, whatever council's decision is today.
Any further discussion, questions that you'd like to put to the officer before I hand back to Councillor Elliott, councillors? Nope. I'll hand back to you then.
Happy for you to put the motion, please.
Okay, so we'll put the motion. Oh, I'll just get it up on the board. Right. So the motion now is as on the board. Those in favour? Those against? Okay, division. Those in favour, Councillor Bishop, Councillor Hughes, Councillor Elliott, Councillor Hewlett, Councillor Golley, Councillor Boglari. Those against? Councillor Edwards, Councillor Tolte, Councillor Gleeson. Thank you. Thank you, Chris, as well, for being here today. Now we've got 11.2.5. Other change to existing approval for apartment building at 54 to 58 Mount Cotton Road, Capalabar. Can I have a mover, please? Councillor Gleeson. Can I have a seconder? Councillor Tolte.
Thank you.
Councillor Gleeson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I'd like to move item 11.2.5, other change to existing approval for apartment building at 54 to 58 Mount Cotton Road, Capalaba.
Councillor Tolte has seconded that. Is there a speaker for or against this one? You want to speak to the motion? Yep.
Speak to the motion if I can, Madam Chair. This is a great outcome. I'm really excited about this today. For the gallery and people that will be watching the link at home, I'll just go through a brief outline of the history of this development. Some time ago, there was in about 2004, there was a 52-lot townhouse development approved. Originally, the site was zoned for townhouses, MDR, and during the 2008 planning scheme, it was changed, uplifted to MDR1, which allowed it to go to 19 metres tall. 06
planning scheme.
So the new application came in for the high-rise six-storey development application. That was approved in late 2009, and in 2010 there was a lot of angst in the community because this was a code-accessible application and not impact-accessible. So for many in the community, they didn't know that this was being considered, and the way that many found out was that it had been reported on the front page of the paper. So I was certainly involved at the time, and maybe I need to declare a conflict of interest on that, but I was involved with the community in protesting against this site, and that was the six tower buildings that had been approved. There were a number of concerns from the community about this development approval, such as car parking requirements, there not being enough, the additional traffic impacts on Aramac Court, Holland Crescent and Almara Street from 271 units that had been approved. But by far and away the biggest concern from the residents and myself was the overshadowing that was going to be caused onto existing townhouses to the southern boundary of this property. There was the six-storey buildings that had been approved were only 4 metres off the southern boundary. So during winter when the sun didn't set as high, there was concerns that many of the townhouses to the southern side were going to be overshadowed for months on end and causing health problems and problems to residents with mould and things like that. So we pushed on for a few months to no avail. That developer eventually went into receivership and it was purchased from the current developer. When that time happened, then there was a pre-lodgement meeting from that developer. I sat in on that and raised the concerns from the community so that the new owner was aware. And ultimately, what is before us today is what I asked them to consider. That was keep the six-storey buildings to the northern end of the building, of the site, go 3 storeys in the middle if they have to, and then 2 storeys, like for like, along the southern boundary to reduce that overshadowing effect. There's been some time since that meeting, but this application has come in and it's pretty much exactly what we discussed on that day, so I'm absolutely ecstatic about this application. The original application allowed for 1.258 car parks per unit. This one allows for 1.453 car parks per unit, so it's about 0.2% increase. Doesn't seem a lot, but it is an increase, and that's a benefit to the community. The unit ultimately has gone from 271 unit approval down to 139 units, so that's 132 units less than what has been previously approved. Now, this goes against everything that's been happening in the city, with developers going out and trying to extend and extend and extend and maximise their yield as much as they possibly can. This is almost reducing this approval by half. I'm assuming there's a couple of councils have got some things to say about this. I've got to say this. I've got no problems with high-rise buildings, 6 storeys, 8 storeys, 10 storeys, whatever. That's not a problem I've got. What I've got a problem with in this case was when it has an adjoining site that's MDR or residential, they just do not cross. MDR 1 zones or whatever the new code is now, that can go to 6 or 8 storeys, have to have buffer zones between other zones. You can't expect Mrs. Jones in a 2-storey house to all of a sudden be overshadowed by a 6-storey building. That's unfair on the existing residents and it makes no sense at all. here in Cleveland where the buildings are going up, at least they're being wrapped by roads. So you've got a building, you've got some sort of a front courtyard, you've got a footpath, you've got a road, you've got another footpath, and you're talking at least 20 metres before it gets to another property. That makes sense. This development didn't make sense. I'm really happy about this. There's going to be a lot of residents going to be cheering this weekend once they hear that this has come about. I look forward to everyone's support. It's a big win in the community, and I'm really excited about it. Thanks, Madam Chair.
Right. Is there for and against on this one? Councillor Elliott?
Thank you.
A speaker for?
Against.
Or against?
You asked before and against, you've had a for, so against.
Against, yep.
Right. Thank you. Yeah, look, it may be a, I think it's a hollow victory on these sort of things because this is what planning schemes are about. When you're a rock throw from one of the biggest shopping centres in, well, in our city sort of thing, a major centre, these are where you want the high densities. This is what you want high density. Remember when the scheme changed, and I didn't support the 06 scheme, but I know the local council at the time supported this sort of thing like that. I supported it sort of thing like that. I don't have a problem with these. This is about the market itself, because I remember one of my my residents in Alexandra Circuit was selling her house. She'd put money down on one of the units, and I think they'd sold 35 at the time, and before the developer went belly up for whatever reason, something like that. So I'm supportive of this high densities right next to shopping centres. I can remember in the 06 scheme, I pushed for it at Alexandra Hills, right next to the shopping centre, for medium density to be there. We had a little bit on the western side. That's the place where you build. This is what you do. This is what town planning is. Unfortunately, they're overshadowing, but, you know, in performance-based outcomes, you're going to get this. Sooner or later, you're going to get this. And this is why it was code, because we saw examples of major developers would be just put each other in court so nothing got done in these centres, and that's why it's NDR1. It's disappointing, but it's the market conditions. I think that's their opinion. I don't think they'd be listening to council to say what they do. I haven't seen any developers listen to us as far as that goes. They do it what they can make a buck at. At this point in time, they want to move on to something else. That's their call. I don't think it's our influence. I'm disappointed in NDR1 site, and I actually voted against in my area, a couple of houses up from me, that we only put one house on a block which is medium density, and we've got other ones going in with four. That's what medium density is about. You start wasting these blocks, you create an urban sprawl. And as you had yesterday from a traffic engineer looking at our Cleveland parking study, all those sort of things, that's the call you've got to make. And if you don't want it, you know, get used to urban sprawl. You know, get car parks, all this sort of thing. These are the things. But anyway.
Speaker four, Councillor Hughes.
Thank you, Chair. I really appreciate that opportunity, and I would speak against Councillor Elliott on this occasion. I understand what he's saying about the high density and the shops there. However, our existing residents are looking to us to support them, and it was clearly an inappropriate development from a point of view of our residents that we stand up for, and I'm happy to support Councillor Gleeson on this. I think it is a good result for our community. Very happy indeed for the local residents. Thank you.
Thank you. Speaker against? Councillor Golay.
Actually, I'm just going to seek some clarification because I don't know whether I'm actually quite torn on this decision. So can I just hold over till comments? Is that possible? Thank you.
I think Councillor... Yeah, I'll go to Speaker against then. I'll take that as a... No, a Speaker for. I think we're up to then. And I think that was supposed to be an against.
I can raise my points, but...
Or we can hold it over and I'll ask for another against. Because I'm...
Comment.
You're right. Okay, I thought you had your hand up as a speaker for and I was trying to get an against. So you... Okay, all right. So we'll go into comments then, Councillor Gollis, and then I'll have Councillor Edwards as well.
Okay, thanks, Madam Chair. I'm torn on this, to quote Councillor Tolte's phrase. Thornlands has, in my view, had its fair share of urban sprawl and townhouses and whatnot. And one of the key issues that we face down there is the
the widening of the Cleveland Redland Bay Road and the traffic congestion that's caused. Now, we seem to be putting more and more sprawl into open greenfield paddocks and areas where residents are actually forced to drive to a local centre just to do their basic shopping, let alone the 70% that actually leave the area to go and work elsewhere. In my mindset, places like Cleveland and Capalabar realistically lend themselves to that high-rise component. And in this particular case, and this is where I'm a bit torn, this is a major centre where basically if you did put high-rise in, you've actually got residents that can walk to and from those amenities. Now, yes, some may still leave to go out of the area to work, but when they're actually localised and present locally, they have the opportunity to walk to shops, cinemas, any type of amenity that's available just by catching their elevator or stairs. They don't have to take a car. And yet in this particular scenario, we're actually celebrating the fact that we've almost got two car parks for people who can, walk to the shop. It's kind of, it's a little bit hypocritical. I know down in my area, we've got developments going ahead where there's, you know, couple of hundred townhouses going in. Those people realistically will still have to drive to a centre to do their shopping. They're not within a sort of walking distance. There's very limited walking distance communities down that have just been built. I'm of the mindset that our major centres like Cleveland and Capalabar really do need to be opened up to go up, and we shouldn't be going out. Shoreline is going to be another example where it's pushed out, and those residents will have to drive to one of our local centres as well. I think this is an example where, realistically, was it the best decision to actually reduce the number of units in an area that's a major centre that would have reduced traffic, would have reduced the use of cars, with the exception of some having to go to work? It just doesn't make sense to me. We're downsizing in an area where we should be upsizing, and we're spreading out in the areas where we shouldn't be spreading, and then copping the brunt because there's traffic congestion and no infrastructure. And then we're screaming to the state government going, give us infrastructure. And I sort of stand on my statement yesterday, we're not really planning, we're almost assessing, and we're letting the developers call the shots. And I know that's not within our realm to change, it's got to be changed at higher, and we work within various planning instruments, but at the end of the day, this, I don't know. I really honestly believe in our major centres we should be going up and supporting that walking, cycling concept that we all espouse to achieve and reduce the number of vehicles on our roads.
Thank you. I've now got Councillor Edwards, Councillor Bishop, Councillor Tolte.
Councillor Gleeson and Councillor Elliott are both correct in my mind. You know, it's important to take into consideration the shift in the shape and size of our buildings from one zoning to another, so that's important. But it's also critical that where we have these areas, which we are close to all the services, that we have that higher density. And that's what we... So Councillor Elliott's right. In my opinion, this would not be coming to us if there would have been an uptake in sales of the existing building there. It wouldn't have happened. So if we don't allow this change, which will still allow high density, we are still thereby encouraging urban sprawl, because they're not going to build something which people aren't going to buy. So you're defeating your own argument by saying, oh, it's got to stay the way it is, because they won't build it because it's not selling. So I think this is market driven. It will still provide the higher density. It provides outcomes that satisfies the divisional councillor. It still satisfies myself that we are still intensifying that area in relation to what we should do, but I think it's probably more of a journey we go on to in the market where we reach that point in time where we can intensify those particular areas to get that building. But at the moment, it's not happening. They're not getting the sales. So this is a balancing act, I think. I think it achieves all outcomes, and not to accept this is only going to encourage urban sprawl because it won't be built.
Thank you. Councillor Bishop, then Councillor Tolte.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. I absolutely acknowledge that tension that's been raised between community expectation dealing with massive change in what has been a residential area around Capalabar with the big box developments nearby. That's changed over time. Absolutely understand the tension between wanting to have a constrained footprint and higher density. The state requires the Redlands City Council to have more people move into our area, and if we don't intensify, that spreads across the whole city. So that tension is very important. I think also, as Councillor Edwards just mentioned, identifying those two things, the market does speak very clearly, and it is a response to the market. One other thing, however, that we need to bear in mind as councillors is that we know things that are coming over the horizon, and it is beholden upon us to look over that horizon and plan for a strategic future, to think about things like transport, because there is going to be, at some point, we would hope, based on the current planning and suggestions and proposal, a high-speed busway going right to that spot. That is not yet there, so the market is not factoring that in, one would think, but we need to go, well, that is exactly the sort of place where the density does need to be increased, otherwise we put that pressure on spreading across the city. People want that the current feel of the Redlands, and if we don't have that higher density in these areas, it's a real problem. My big concern is that if we send a signal to the industry, the development industry, that we don't want these things anywhere in the city, that is going to be a big disincentive, and ultimately will put pressure on exactly the people who are concerned about these things happening. So we need to send a very clear signal, and I think the biggest and strongest signal we can do is to get our house in order as councillors to set the policy direction tied to a very cohesive whole of city transport strategy. That will tell us whether these things happen in certain places, not across the whole city, but to be very specific about where we want these sorts of things and to look over that longer-term horizon. This should be one of those places, but we don't currently have the planning in place to enforce us to go down that path. So we're in this kind of should we, shouldn't we. I appreciate what Councillor Gleeson and we all are doing in responding to the community, and yet there is a responsibility to the future citizens of this city to actually say there are places where we must do the higher density if we want to retain the feel of Redlands into the future. So it is a really, you know, it's an important thing, and we need to look over the horizon to the future. Thanks.
Thank you, Councillor Bishop. Councillor Tolte.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In response to some of the statements that were made, this is a high-rise site and the first building's already built, high-rise. Anyone who does their weekly shop knows that even if the Woolworths is over the road, you're not going to carry back a full trolley load of shopping across four-lane highway. So you're going to take your car, even if it's only 200 metres away. You can't consider parking in the same way that we used to, because we have so much going on at the moment. We've got grocery deliveries, we've got electronic driverless vehicles on the horizon. So these things all change and move. We're still talking about a density of 134 dwellings on this site. That is a lot of people coming in and out on a daily basis. So the density is still significant. To suggest that by supporting this change, you're not supporting a high density. The difference is from an exceptionally high density to a high density, not from a high density to a low density with this change. And a much better outcome with more open space. If we're going to have more families living in units and apartments, we need a little bit more space for kids, and this is an ideal site for that. It's a little bit more spacious now than it was before, and it has an area just outside the fence which is also parkland, and it has the huge park over the road. I think, yes, it is ideal for density, but this is a good outcome for the community, so I would encourage you to support it.
Thank you. Any more comments? Briefly, Councillor Golley, because you've had a turn.
Yeah, thanks. It was just something I forgot to mention before, Madam Chair, and it's in reflection to the overshadowing. I mean, I could probably quote sites here locally where a
due to infill, two-storey homes have been built right onto the fence line, overshadowing the low-set homes of the elderly residents next door.
Point of order.
Overshadowing is going to happen.
A point of order has been called, Councillor Golay. Your point of order, Councillor
Chair. Sorry, Chair, I thought I understand on two-storey buildings the upper floor has to be offset from the boundary.
Chris, went with to do with infill on small lot housing, I think, is the question.
Through the Chair, Queensland Development Code applies to houses and the like in terms of the setbacks to ground floor and first floor, and there is a requirement to be set back from the boundary under that, under the QDC.
Thanks for that, Chris. As I said, I can probably take you to sites and show you where that's actually not the case. And second of all, just on one of the statements Councillor Tolte made about people are still going to walk within 200 metres to a shopping centre, use their car to go 200 metres to a shopping centre. I would argue that's actually correct, 100% correct. And I would also suggest that the developments on Boundary Road, where we're proposing to put a shortcut across the creek, which is probably 200 or 300 metres away from a shopping centre.
Can we stick to the one
people
on...
People are going to use
excuse
their
me, Councillor Golay, I'm asking you
shops.
To stick to the one in front.
And
in
I don't see the need to spend $1.3 million on a bridge. Thank you.
I think so. Right. Are there any other comments? Okay. I'll say my 2 cents worth. I also remember when this came in, and I remember standing in front of some very angry residents with the then mayor to discuss this one. The neighbours were going to be greatly impacted because there were 6 storeys, so there's going to be a lot of overshadowing. This is a better outcome for them because it's 2 or 3 storeys now in those areas, so I'm presuming all that shade and everything will now be significantly reduced. Am I correct, Chris? Yep. The open space on ground level is actually 1.3% short still. So for those councillors who are saying we should have even higher density, perhaps this isn't the size allotment where we should have, because from my questions yesterday, that's what I'm gathering. It, overall, it's okay, but on the ground level, it's still 1.3% short. Is that correct?
Through the Chair, the deemed to comply solution for communal open space is 5% of the site. They're proposing 3.7% of the site as communal open space, but supplementing that with rooftop space on top of the apartment building.
Yep. Oh, so we are short in open space, but it's one of these deemed complied ones. And the rooftop garden was just mentioned there. So I'd like to mention a former colleague, Deborah Henry, who was the Thornlands councillor at the time, and she fought so hard for that rooftop garden. So thank you, Deb, because it's many years later and it's actually come to fruition, the positive of that. Yep. No, one of the towers has a rooftop garden and one doesn't. I would like to have actually seen it on both, but is that not possible as a condition?
Through the Chair, Tower A, which is already built, has a rooftop.
Has the rooftop garden.
As part of a previous change to the approval, the rooftop garden from Tower B was removed.
Right, and that's been approved, Brian. Okay, so we can't do that, but well done, Deb. You know, 8 years later, what you did has ended up being a great benefit to these residents. And I also just wanted to double-check the other issue at the time at those meetings was the access onto Mount Cotton Road, and it has been confirmed that the local area traffic management case is still current and it's still going to be happening. I just want that confirmed, please.
Certainly, conditions requiring local area traffic management remain in the approval.
Right, so based on going out and listening to the community must have been 8 years ago, and I can remember getting up with the whiteboard that night with Councillor Gleeson downstairs at the Bowls Club. The shadowing, the open space and the access onto Holland Crescent and Mount Cotton Road to me were the 3 issues at that time that were concerning to residents. And due to the market, not because the developer didn't want to do it, but due to the market, for once it was in the residents' favour. So I'll pass back to Councillor Gleeson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Look, the left-in, left-out apparently hadn't been added to the original approval when the new developers took it over. was coordinated through TMR and it was approved by TMR, and so that has been constructed. That's already done. I want residents to know there will be a second tower going up. It's a bit smaller than the current tower that's already there. There's 54 units, apartments in the current tower. And there's about 10 less in the second one that's coming up, and then the rest will be filled with townhouses as long as this is approved today. Just in response to pedestrian and walkability, that's been mentioned on this site, and I totally understand why you would build high-rise or high-density around major shopping centres. Totally get that. And certainly if you look at the Capalaba Master Plan, to the north of Moreton Bay Road and to the south of Old Cleveland Road, you would absolutely encourage high-rise development through there. But the last thing we want to do is start creating high-density living across the road from Moreton Bay Road. It's the busiest road in the city. It's four lanes wide with the biggest vehicle usage in the city. The last thing you want to do is see Mrs. Jones walking across the road with her two kids carting 8 shopping bags. That's not a pedestrian road, and all it's going to do is clog Moreton Bay Road further and hold up the vehicular traffic. It's not an ideal site to encourage pedestrian activity. Certainly the 2010 Capalaba Master Plan was before my time. Nothing really has come about of it as yet. Hasn't seen any uptake inside that Capalaba Master Plan area. There is some plans afoot at the moment, and that's being looked at. And hopefully we will get some of that growth and that uptake up through Dollery Road and all through there. And I'd absolutely support higher rise. And indeed, Capalaba Central Shopping Centre, about half of its floor plan is approved under the master plan to go to about 8 stories. So that sort of development is absolutely ideal around major shopping precincts. So I have no problem with that. But not once you cross the busiest intersection or the busiest road in our city. You just can't do that. I want to thank the developer for taking concerns on board, and I really hope that this gets up and councillors ask for your support on this one. Ta.
And was that putting the motion?
And I'd like to put the motion, please.
There you go. All in favour? Those against? So, division. Those in favour? Councillor Bishop, Councillor Gleeson, Councillor Tolte, Councillor Hughes, Councillor Edwards. The meeting hasn't finished. Councillor Elliott, Councillor Hewlett, Councillor Golay and Councillor Boglari. Those against? Councillor Elliott. Thank you. Okay, we have had no mayoral minute, no notices of appeal, no notices of motion, no urgent business that I'm aware of. Closed session. Do we need to move into closed session? Was there any need for discussion? Nope. Okay. So 16.1.1. Can I have a move, Councillor Elliott, seconded Councillor Bishop? All happy to put the motion, Councillor Elliott? All in favour? Passed unanimously. 16.1.2, acquisition of valueless land. Move Councillor Edwards, seconded Councillor Elliott. We'll put the motion. All those in favour? Passed unanimously. 16.2.1, delegated authority for grass cutting. Although, move Councillor Elliott, seconded Councillor Edwards. And we'll put the motion. All those in favour? Passed unanimously. So we'll call the meeting closed at 11:11. It's not an agenda item, is it? 11:45. And once again, congratulations, Councillor Hewlett. And thank you, everyone in the gallery who sat through that many hours. Thank you.
Thanks, Deputy Mayor.
Thank you, Paul.